I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The first kind of question I wanted to talk about, it was the one I wrote up, was just generally about your education, because I think I know the history of it, but it's that thing where it's like I'm not 100% sure. I've never properly asked you outright. It's usually just been mum saying something, or it's been mentioned in conversation. Because it's kind of taken you everywhere, sort of a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I sort of went to a comprehensive school in Whitley Bay. And then I went to university. So I did 3 years of preclinical. So it was the old-fashioned course. So you do 3 years preclinical, which is pure science. Mm. And so we had physiology, anatomy, and biochemistry in the first year with all the scientists. So we did 3 years of that in the preclinical. And then you went did your clinical, which was basically, you know, 4 months medicine, 4 months surgery. And in the second year, you did lots of specialties. Then the final year, it was 4 months medicine, 4 months surgery, and 4 months elective. For my elective, I went to, and spent a few months in an A&E department in Auckland.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You were encouraged to go abroad to broaden your horizons. So I went to New Zealand, and I said, just spent 4 months in an A&E department learning how to deal with medicine in New Zealand. And it was slightly different in that, slightly more accidents, a bit more violent. So it was a completely different way of doing things. And then I was a house officer in Newcastle, then I was a house officer in Oxford, and I went back to Newcastle. And after Newcastle, we went to Nottingham, stayed in Nottingham for about a year and a half, then went up to Aberdeen, stayed there for 20-odd years, and now we've moved to Liverpool. So, yeah, it's a lot of travel.
Just been all about the place, really.
Yeah, well, that's what used to happen, but people don't do that so much now.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. Oh, yeah, the next question was going to ask about the kind of I don't know if career progression is the right word. I don't know if that's the right phrase for it, but it's the sort of progression of being a doctor. Because I vaguely remember you saying it's different now to how it was when you started.
It used to be very much you did an apprenticeship. So you were trained to become a doctor and you then trained to become a consultant. And because jobs were tighter, there was far fewer jobs in the 80s than there are now. So in order to get jobs, you just have to move around in order to get the best jobs, which is what I've done. Nowadays, there's far more jobs available, so people tend not to move. So it's fairly easy to qualify from a medical school and then just go get a job and just stay in one place and end up as a consultant in that one place. But the old-fashioned way of doing it, of moving around a lot, meant you picked up all the best things from all the places you worked and you realized all the worst things. So, and what it meant by the time I went to sort of Aberdeen as a senior registrar, I'd already picked up all the best bits of Oxford, the best bits of Newcastle, the best bits of Nottingham. And it meant that when I got to Aberdeen, I then picked up the best bits of Aberdeen. So when I was a consultant in Aberdeen, I was experiencing, took a lot of new things to Aberdeen. But that's how it used to be. I used to pick up all the best things. Yeah, but it was out of necessity because there's far fewer jobs. And it was very difficult to get consultant posts in the 80s, especially respiratory medicine posts. You're in the mindset that you could do anything. You're in the mindset that you're willing to do all sorts of things. I mean, when I was putting, you know, when I was a medical student, I put a chest drain in. Whereas nowadays, that's only done by registrars and consultants.
So
when I was a senior house officer, I was putting pacing wires in, whereas nowadays that's again a senior a consultant's job. So I was doing things as a medical student which would now be done by registrars and consultants. It was just that it was expected you would do it because there were so few staff that you were expected to do all of the things, and you got very good and very confident at doing things. And because you did loads of things which you'd never seen before, but you knew sort of how to do it, you just took it on, and you're very skilled. You know, I could put a needle into virtually anything I wanted. You know, so I put, you know, lumbar punctures, you know, putting stuff into hearts, putting stuff into livers. You know, you got very, very confident. So we got very good and very competent at doing things. And nowadays, nobody would even think of allowing any of these, and they would say, oh, I've not been shown how to do it, I've not been trained how to do it. Whereas we just gave it a go, we just did it.
Is do you think that's down to a change in education or in training, or is it something else?
I was trained to become a consultant, whereas nowadays people are educated to become specialists. There is a very subtle difference.
Okay.
So training is like, we were trained like an apprenticeship, so we just did everything.
Yeah.
So anything that was thrown at us, we just did. When as a house officer, I wasn't very good as a doctor. My whole role in life was to be the gopher. So I did all the blood tests. I did all the ECGs. I took all the blood gas, did all the ECG, you know, arranged all the investigations, administered all the intravenous drugs. Nowadays, the house officers, there's phlebotomists to do the bloods, the ECG technicians, the ECGs. There's respiratory physiologists to do the blood gases. There's ward clerks and things to do the ordering the investigations. So I was bottom of the pile, but my job was a gopher, and I got very good at doing lots of practical procedures. I got very good at dealing with people. I got very good at recognizing sick patients. And I learned how to diagnose later on as I got more skilled. Whereas nowadays, we get junior doctors who come out expecting to be able to diagnose everything, but in fact, they don't know how to diagnose anything. But because they don't have that gopher role, they're sort of missing a role in life. Whereas I used to do 120 hours a week as a gopher, and it was great fun. Had a whale of a time. And then because you've done a good job, you got a good reference, which meant you get into another good job, and it worked like that. Whereas nowadays, they're all just appointed to any old post. They're missing out on a lot of the fun that we used to have. It used to be great fun. You're part of a team. The team spirit was fantastic. You were led by a consultant and you had a whale of a time. Whereas nowadays, they've fragmented the teams. It's not a consultant-led service, it's consultant-delivered. So when I was a junior doctor, I was taking the bloods, doing all the investigations, seeing the patients. And what do I do nowadays? I see all the patients, take all history examinations. So I'm essentially doing the same job I did, started when 1988. So I'm doing the same job I was doing 32 years ago. So wow. Not much has changed. So things have probably got worse rather than better. So although the resources are more investigations, far more staff, the quality of the job has deteriorated. It's not as much fun. There's no team. Used to, you know, the nurses, we worked very closely with the nurses. You worked with as a very tight team. It's gone completely. As a consequence, the patients suffer because there's no continuity of care.
Okay.
So it'd be the same doctor seeing them every day in the hospital. So you'd see the patient when they came in, you take the history, do all the investigations, and then look after them every day. So you got to know them very well. They got to know you very well, and they would get better quickly. Whereas now you come in, you're seen by one person who then get shunted onto somebody else, and then you get shunted onto another ward, and you get a different consultant, a different team looking after you every day. There's no continuity of care. And when you take on a new person, you're going to be more defensive. So people stay in hospital longer. They get more investigations. When you do more investigations, you have this phenomenon called vomit, which is known as a victim of modern imaging technique, which means that the more tests you do, the more likely you are to find a spurious result. So you basically do lots and lots of imaging, lots of tests, lots of spurious results, so you get lots of vomit, and they end up being over-investigated for all sorts of weird and wonderful things which are irrelevant to why they came in. So patient care is not streamlined, it's not as personal, there's no continuity, there's nobody in charge. It's not as good, quite frankly.
Again, that,
so you can either be looked after by a house officer who is dead tired after doing 120 hours. It was actually very good and very competent and very nice. Or nowadays you get looked after by somebody who's wide awake. He's very nice at telling you what they don't know is wrong with them, but they'll order lots of investigations. So it's, I think it used to be better in some ways. It might be better now in some other ways.
There's lots of discussions about doctors being overworked.
When I started my job in 1988, I was doing 120 hours a week. So that meant being on the ward from 8 till 6 every day, looking after 30 patients. And then one night in three, you're on call. So you're on call from 6 till 8 the next morning. And then at weekends, you did from the Friday morning to the Monday evening on call. So I was doing 120 hours a week. Whereas nowadays, they do their 37 hours a week, maybe doing, you know, maybe 40, 45 hours a week, but they do it in shifts. So they do a block of maybe, you know, 8 hours here. So the benefits are they don't do as many hours, but the problem with that is they don't have the continuity. So they're not looking after the same group of people every day. So I might have been doing 120 hours, but I was looking after the same group of people for the whole week.
Yeah.
So I knew the patient. So if I got phoned during the middle of the night and they said, Mrs. So-and-so is ill, I knew exactly who Mrs. So-and-so was. And I would say, well, let's do this. And then I'd go back to sleep. And usually you were correct. Whereas nowadays, they're doing shifts. So they're up overnight. They get called to see somebody. They have never seen this person before. So they have to sit down and work out what Mrs. Smith came in with. And then they have to sit down and then try and work out what's wrong with Mrs. Smith. So it's very frightening for them. The other problem is I used to be looking after maybe 30 patients. Nowadays, they're looking after maybe 100 patients for 8 hours. So I would rather do the 120 hours looking after a small number of patients who I knew than doing 40 hours looking after patients who I have no ideas going on with them. I mean, nobody does from, you know, Friday morning till Monday evening with no sleep anymore. So, I mean, but then the really interesting thing is a consultant, you can be on call nowadays. When I was in Aberdeen, I'd be a consultant on call from 9 o'clock on a Monday morning till 9 o'clock the next Monday morning. And I could be up all night looking after a patient. If I was a junior doctor, I wouldn't be allowed to work the next day because it'd be dangerous because I was tired. However, because I was a consultant, I was expected to work the next day. So the oldest, so, you know, this was happening, this happens nowadays. So you get consultants who have to get called in to look after patients and they have to work the next day. Whereas if you're a junior doctor, you wouldn't be allowed to do that because it's dangerous to do that sort of thing.
Right.
When you have to do 120 hours without sleep, and they start hallucinating. It got so bad, I remember in Oxford, going doing a ward round one morning. I'd been up, so it was a Sunday morning, so I'd been up since Friday morning, and we went to see this patient on a ward, and we're going, I can't remember this patient. So we looked in the notes, and I found out we'd actually operated on him during the night, but nobody could remember him. So, you know, we were just so tired.
Was everybody just so tired they couldn't remember this patient's name or what happened?
We couldn't even remember seeing. We couldn't even remember the operation we'd done on him.
I would argue that's bad.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is you actually get very good at coping with being very tired.
Okay.
So you actually, you know, then military do this. They train you to be tired and to make decisions when you're tired. So we knew no different. So we were trained to work when we were tired.
Yeah.
So we could make decisions when we were tired. And we made very good decisions when we were tired. When you are trained to work when you're tired, when you spend all your life being tired and working when you're tired, it just becomes a way of life and you get very good at it. COVID was good fun.
I'll phrase it as a formal question just because I did write it down.
The worst thing happened to me, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I put a grant application in to a grant funding body and they rejected it in 30 minutes. So that wasn't fun.
Oh man, okay. I mean, that's not quite as, you know, traumatic as the other stuff.
No, I suppose not.
We're recording this in September 2020. And we're kind of in the midst of a rise in cases of COVID-19. And obviously you specialize in respiratory medicine. So I wanted to ask, how has the pandemic been for you? Like, has it changed the focus of your work or is it taken away from it? Or,
well, all the research I was doing has basically been shut down by COVID. So that was fairly clear in mid-March that all the research was going to be stopped by COVID. So as a respiratory physician who does work at Aintree, I volunteered to man the COVID ward. So I went onto the COVID ward on the first day wearing a face mask, a glove and a pinny, and promptly caught COVID from a patient and was a bit sick for a couple of weeks. I don't remember anything about it because apparently I was delirious. I was delirious for a week, so I couldn't remember anything. I was confused. Anyway, I went back to work and it was great. I mean, it was good fun because, you know, the ward was full. We used hardly any investigations. So I was trained to make a diagnosis based on a history, examination, one or two blood tests and a chest x-ray. And when you've got people with COVID, you make the diagnosis based on a history, an examination, a chest x-ray and one or two blood tests. My trainee had trained me to look after a lot of patients, work out what was wrong with them really quickly and not to rely on investigations. So it was great because I was just ideally suited to that sort of an environment. The other really good thing was that, you know, the nurses, everybody was pulling together. The pattern of working in the hospital changed. So instead of having a different junior every day, we suddenly had a team. So I had a team of people working with me. So I had myself. I then had a registrar who was the same registrar every day. I then had the same junior doctors every day instead of having different doctors every day. So I suddenly had a team. And as a team, we got back to the old way of working as a team. You know, the junior doctors got to know the consultants. There was continuity of care because we were seeing the same patients every day. The nurses, we were working together. So it was very much like what it used to be, team working, very busy, minimal investigations, lots of decisions. You having to be very confident in your decisions. And it was like, you know, I was back to the environment to which I was trained and having to make decisions, you know, risky decisions, having, you know, basically flying by the seat of your pants, which is what I was doing 32 years ago. And that was exactly what I was being employed to do during COVID. So apart from nearly being wiped out by COVID, once I'd survived, I was able to go back on the ward, not worried about catching it. And, you know, you're able to look after the juniors, able to look after the nurses. So the nurses said I was very much of the old school and it was great. So, and, you know, had an absolute whale of a time, totally enjoyed it.
I think you're the only person who's enjoying.
COVID is a miserable disease.
Yeah.
It's not a pleasant disease if you get it badly. So, you know, there was lots of really, really sick patients, but we're able to work out what COVID, you know, because I took over the first week of COVID. So we learned very quickly what COVID was like. And once we'd worked out and recalibrated ourselves, we all sort of worked together. So I think virtually all the consultants who'd worked on the wards looking after COVID patients enjoyed it. It was a miserable disease to look after, but we were able to save a lot of lives by doing very simple things. It's not nice to have it. I mean, from personal experience, it's not nice to have, but, you know, as a some way to look at when you're looking after people, it's good. It's good. It's enjoyable.
Because, yes, I sort of imagine that's kind of, if not the best thing, certainly one of the positives of the job is that you get to help people.
You work with, you know, the best thing about medicine is the patients and the people you work with. And suddenly we're back to the model of teams working together, looking after the same patients every day. So it was back to that model. So we started to, you know, the enjoyment came from seeing a patient come in a bit unwell, get terribly unwell, and get better and go home. So we had that continuity of care. So yeah. I looked at, you know, I was on the ward for like 8 weeks. So we were seeing people coming in, getting really ill, going home. So there was that continuity of care. So yeah. We were starting to enjoy the patients. We were getting fulfillment from the patients. The juniors were part of a team. They got to know the consultants, the registrars really well. They got to know the patients really well. They got to know the nurses really well. We worked really, really, really hard, but we enjoyed it.
Before we get into the episode today, I want to give a quick shout out to Twin Strangers Productions and their sci-fi horror adventure audio drama, Syntax, the fourth season of which is coming soon. Syntax is a fantastic show that smashes together science fiction, cryptids, speculative biology, and my personal favorite, linguistics. It follows the story of Silas as he works to translate an ancient text, hoping to find clues that will help his team of six understand the mystery of the breaches. If you enjoy Annihilation, as in the book, not the concept in general, or the Stargate TV series, I think you'll really love this story. Season 4 of Syntax is releasing in April 2024, making it the perfect time to start listening. Syntax is streaming now on all major podcast platforms. Visit syntaxpodcast.com, that's Syntax Podcast, all one word, for more information. Know the depths. Wish for more.